Well, good morning, everyone. Happy Valentine's Day. Someone can't say. Well, as President Dudley mentioned in his speech, household debt increased significantly leading up to the recession, and consumers are now working through a deleveraging process. What I'm going to show you is how significant these trends have been for households in our region, primarily using a new and unique data set that we have available at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. So there are four topics that I'm going to cover. First, we'll look at how much debt did households take on during the run-up in our region, and what I'll show there is that compared to U.S. averages, debt levels are relatively low in much of the region, although in some pockets they have risen to relatively high levels. Second, we'll look at how much deleveraging has occurred. And there, what I'll show is that debt reductions, while certainly significant by historical standards, have been milder in the region than the U.S. average. Third, we'll look for signs of stress in the region, and there we'll see that delinquency rates are relatively high in some places, such as New York City and Long Island and Puerto Rico, and in some particular spots within upstate's urban cores. And then finally, we'll look at signs of convalescence in our region. And what I'll show there is that recent increases in credit inquiries and in auto debt for households in our region suggest that more consumers are now beginning to spend and are willing to and able to borrow to do so. So let me start by telling you about the data that we'll be using for this analysis. It's a database housed at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. It's called the Federal Reserve Bank of New York Consumer Credit Panel. And it's a database that contains data from individual credit reports. It's an anonymous random sample covering all households with a credit report. It contains information on all debt obligations of these people within the data set. So we tend to group these into five categories: mortgage debt, home equity lines, auto loans, student loans, credit cards, and then an other category which includes, for example, retail credit, say for example that you get at a department store. And it contains very little demographic information, but we do have detailed information on where people live. So we're going to use this to track this information for households within our district. And finally, the data are quarterly and date back to 1999 and go through the fourth quarter of 2010. So we have over a decade of information that we can use for this analysis. So let me first show you a little bit about what the household debt situation looks like in terms of the mix of different types of debt that households have. So this is in 2010 for the U.S. as a whole. If you look at total debt, the total amount of debt in the U.S. as a whole, about three quarters of it is mortgage debt. So when combined with home equity lines, which are another 6%, that means that roughly 80% of all debt is housing-related debt. So that's quite a large share, and that's driving a lot of what we'll see that's going on. And that's actually a lot different than things looked in 2000 when mortgage and home equity debt was roughly 70% of all debt. So over a 10-year period, we can see that housing-related debt grew significantly, and that's actually has connections to where we'll see debt grew most in our region and across the country. It had to do a lot with where households took on more mortgage debt. So we'll next look at some of these regional trends in household debt. So to do this, we're going to compute debt-to-income ratios. So in other words, we're going to be dividing debt, scaling it by income. We're going to do this because incomes vary considerably across places, and one might expect that the amount of debt households can take on would be different depending on what those income levels are. So debt-to-income allows us to get sort of a measure of a debt burden across places. So let's start by looking at this ratio for the U.S. as a whole. I'll also point out that income data will be deriving from another source, and those data only go through the second quarter of 2010, so we'll start by looking at data that just come through the first half of 2010, and we'll show more recent trends for the second half in a little bit. So this is the debt-to-income ratio for the U.S. as a whole. So right now, it's roughly at about 1. So what that would say is that if, for example, an average person had an income of, say, $40,000 per year, they would also have about $40,000 in debt. So if you look at this for the U.S. as a whole, we can see that this ratio increased throughout this entire period, leading up to about 2007, 2008, where the ratio leveled off, and then it began to decline. So much of the increase for the U.S. as a whole was due to an increase in mortgage debt. although it included other forms of debt as well. And much of the decline, although it's only been happening for the past couple of years, that's also been largely a decline in mortgage debt. Now, we'll focus more on this deleveraging part, the time period where debt actually declines in a minute. So let's focus a little bit just on trends across places. So let me show you some examples of places where debt grew the most throughout the country. So Stockton, California was the place where this debt-to-income ratio grew the most of any metro area in the entire country. And there you can see that it doubled in just an eight-year period before it reached its peak of almost two, so almost double the rate for the U.S. And these sharp increases are typical of many of the places that are associated with the housing bubble. Say, for example, you know, we can see here Las Vegas and Phoenix, but as I'll show in a minute, this is typical of many places that experience the housing bubble. So we can also see that these places have had a large decline. So the debt-to-income ratio has had a sharp decline in Stockton, again, compared to, say, the U.S. So let's look at how these trends compare to those for our region. So here are three upstate New York metropolitan areas, and you can see clearly the pattern is much different, that debt-to-income ratios were lower throughout the entire period and did not rise as sharply. And actually, the decline, there's not much of a decline for upstate New York metros, if any. So that's quite a bit different than the U.S. experience. For New York City, the rate is also below the U.S., this debt-to-income ratio. Now that's due in large part because there's a significant share of households that rent their properties in New York City area, and so they don't have a mortgage and don't have mortgage debt. But you can see that the increase in this debt-to-income ratio over the period roughly parallels that for the U.S. So that pace of increase was similar. Looking at Long Island and northern New Jersey, there they roughly follow the same pattern as the U.S., but you can see for Long Island and Edison, the debt-to-income ratios are now above the U.S. and have not come down quite as much. And for Newark, Newark roughly follows the same pattern as the U.S. In Poughkeepsie, the debt-to-income ratio actually held above the U.S. for much of this period and still is holding above the U.S. level, whereas for Fairfield County and Kingston, they roughly follow the same path as for the U.S. Now, we also have data for Puerto Rico. So here we can see the debt-to-income ratio for Puerto Rico. We have the income data that are available to merge this with are only available through the first half of 2009, so the data aren't quite as up to date. But the pattern you can see is one where the debt-to-income ratio is higher for Puerto Rico than it is for the mainland. That debt-to-income ratio you can also see began to decline sooner, which is not surprising since the recession in Puerto Rico began much earlier than it did on the mainland. So we can see the geography of this pattern more comprehensively if we look at these data on a map. So this is a map of the debt-to-income ratio for 2010 quarter two, for every metropolitan area in the country. Places in red are places where the debt-to-income ratio was above average, and places in shades of blue are places where it was below average. Now this might look familiar. It actually looks similar to a map that we presented at the last quarterly press briefing when we talked about the geography of the housing boom. So many of these places in red, where debt is above average, are places that had the biggest run-up in home prices and the biggest decline. And again, that may not be surprising since a lot of the run-up in debt was an increase in mortgage debt. But you know, we can see places where this is the highest, you know, are in California, Nevada, Arizona, other parts, West Coast, Colorado, Florida, much of the state of Florida, and then several spots along the Boston-Washington corridor. They tend to be lowest in much of the center of the country, especially Texas and a lot of the Northeast. So let's zoom in and look at our region in a bit more detail. So here's the Federal Reserve Second District, and we can see that across upstate New York, these debt-to-income ratios are certainly below average, and that they're above average in some of the lower Hudson Valley, in Kingston, Poughkeepsie, and above average in Fairfield, Long Island, and Edison. Now we actually can zoom in and look at these data on a more detailed level by looking at them on a zip code level, which help us see what's going on in particular neighborhoods. And we have debt data for zip codes going up to the present, but income data are much more limited at the zip code level. So we'll have to use a data set that only goes through 2007. But that's okay, that's right around when U.S. debt reached its peak, just slightly before. And what it's gonna allow us to do is look at differences across neighborhoods within these places to see where, when debt was around at its peak, where some neighborhoods were that had higher debt versus where some that had lower debt. So let's start by looking at an example in upstate New York. We'll zoom in on Buffalo. What we can see is that there's only one zip code in the entire metropolitan area where the debt-to-income ratio is above average. This is a suburb of Boston. It's a small rural suburb south of Buffalo. But clearly you can see it, for much of the area, there isn't much heterogeneity. Most of these places, most of these neighborhoods have debt-to-income that's below average. And that's actually true if you look across the metropolitan areas in upstate New York. There's maybe one zip code in each of these metropolitan areas where one or two where there's debt that's above average. So let's zoom in and look at the New York City area. So for Manhattan and for much of the Bronx, debt-to-income ratios are well below average in blue. Again, that's not surprising because these are places where there is a high share of renters, people without mortgages. But you can see what's masked when we just look at New York City as a whole is that there are parts of Queens and Brooklyn and Staten Island where these debt-to-income ratios are actually far above average. And we'll talk more about some of those indications in a little bit. Now, these are just two examples. In your appendix, there are maps for all the places, all the territories that we cover. So there's maps of the Lower Hudson Valley, of northern New Jersey and Fairfield, so you can look for particular areas that you're covering or that you're interested in to see which particular neighborhoods have especially high debt compared to average. Now, as President Dudley mentioned in his speech, as the crisis unfolded in 2008, the debt burden of many households proved unsustainable. And as a consequence, debt began to fall sharply and delinquencies rose. So what we'll do next is look at the degree to which these two trends have happened for households in our region. So we'll start by looking at the magnitude of deleveraging that's occurred. So here we'll look at changes in debt per capita. So we'll look at dollar changes in debt per capita from the peak to the present and see what that deleveraging amount looks like. So this is not debt to income, this is just total debt in dollars on a per person basis. So the U.S. reached its peak in 2008, quarter three, and we'll look at the change from then to the fourth quarter of 2010. So what this shows is that for the U.S., on a per-person basis, debt declined by roughly $5,000 per person during this period. Now, the part in blue is the portion that's housing-related, mortgages and home equity lines, and the portion in red is non-mortgage debt. So you can see that much of this decline, which the vast majority of this decline, was mortgage-related debt. Now, what is this decline due to? It's due to a combination of both households defaulting on their loans, so that reduces debt, but also households paying down their debt. So paying down their mortgages, paying down their credit cards. And we actually studied this in detail and published some information about this in one of our quarterly reports on household debt and credit in the third quarter of 2010. So if you're interested in learning more about that, we can point you to that report. But let's compare this to maybe an example that's quite a bit different than average, Las Vegas. So here we can see an example of a place where debt has declined much more rapidly. There, the decline is roughly just over $18,000 per person. A big decline, of course, in mortgage-related debt, probably more of this related to defaults than maybe is average. But that's an example of maybe more extreme case. Now, looking across places in northern New York and Puerto Rico, or New York, northern New Jersey, and Puerto Rico, we can see that for metropolitan areas across these places, this amount of deleveraging is quite a bit smaller than average. In fact, in Buffalo, total debt per person is still rising. So clearly the deleveraging impetus is not as significant for Buffalo and for other spots in upstate New York. For Puerto Rico, the decline has been very mild, but you can also see across New York and downstate and northern New Jersey, and in each case, these debt reductions have been, they're certainly high by historical standards, but are lower than the US average. So despite this mild degree of deleveraging, and in fact lower debt to income in much of the region, there are still signs of stress for many households that in the region. And we can see this by looking at loan delinquencies. So what we're gonna do is look at loan delinquencies because that's gonna tell us the level of stress faced by some households that are within the larger group. So if you're just looking at averages across places, you might miss the fact that there are chunks of households that are facing significant stress. So it can actually be true that for a region that may have relatively low debt, maybe a mild degree of deleveraging, but there can be a significant number of households that are facing stress within that. So let's take a look at the delinquency rate. So what this maps out here is the percentage of all debt that's 90 or more days delinquent. So we're starting with the U.S. as a whole. And that rate rose from about 2% to about reaching a peak of close to 9% for the U.S. as a whole. So during this period when it was increasing, that's due to a combination of more households becoming delinquent, say for the first time, but also households having more and more debt that's becoming delinquent, adding to the amount of debt that's delinquent as month to month they may continue to be late. Recently, that rate has actually stabilized and started to come down over the past few quarters. So let's look at how this compares to places in our region. For New York City, the delinquency rate rose much more sharply, reached a level of close to 14%, well above the U.S. average, and has shown little sign of coming down, although it has stabilized in recent quarters. Similarly, for Long Island, the rate reached a much higher percent, roughly 12%, although there, it actually has come down over the past couple of quarters. This is very different than upstate New York, as one might expect, where the delinquency rate is quite a bit lower, but it has actually continued to increase and has not shown signs of coming down, but certainly there we see a lower share of households that are probably facing high degrees of stress. For northern New Jersey and Puerto Rico, these rates are roughly around where they are for the U.S., although again, in these two places, although they've leveled off to some extent, really not showing any signs of decline. So we can actually zoom in and look at these delinquency rates in more geographic detail and look at these rates at the zip code level. So this will give us a chance to see which particular neighborhoods within these places have high delinquency rates. And this is for the present, it's for the fourth quarter of 2010. So let's start by looking at the same example we showed last time in the Buffalo metropolitan area. So we saw that delinquency rates were quite low for upstate as a whole, but here you can see there are actually just a few neighborhoods in the Buffalo metropolitan area that have relatively high delinquency rates. In fact, there's a couple of neighborhoods where it's well above the U.S. average. And these are in the urban cores of Buffalo, the city of Buffalo, and up north, that's the city of Niagara Falls. So this is an example of some places where households are actually under stress that may get missed when looking at the rate for the region as a whole. Looking across upstate New York, it's a somewhat similar story. In Rochester, we see just one zip code in its urban core, similarly for Binghamton, so there may be something going on there. And then for other spots, you can see that there are maybe one or two zip codes that have above average delinquency rates, although it's more common in the Albany-Glens Falls area where these rates, there's a few more places where these rates are relatively high. So we can further zoom in on the New York City area. And here we can see that delinquency rates are relatively high in some parts of Upper Manhattan, in much of the Bronx, and in parts of Queens and Brooklyn. So these parts of Queens and the Bronx and Brooklyn are probably, in many ways, overlap these places where we saw relatively high debt levels. But that wasn't the case for some of the Bronx and Upper Manhattan. So you can see we're able to pick out some differences by looking at the delinquency rate and see that there are actually households that are in trouble despite the average, low debt-to-income ratio for the region as a whole. Now here we also have maps available in your appendix if you're interested in looking at delinquency rates for neighborhoods in places where you're covering. So we have maps for northern New Jersey, for the Lower Hudson Valley, and for Fairfield. So finally, what we'll do is see whether these data on household debt indicate that there are any signs of recovery in the region. So we'll ask the question whether consumers are seeking and taking on any types of new debt since the recession has ended. This would be a sign that consumers are increasingly willing to spend and borrow as the economy recovers and as credit starts to become more available. So we're going to look at two data series from our consumer credit panel that are particularly useful in answering this question. So first, we'll look at, in terms of whether consumers are seeking new credit, we'll look at credit inquiries and whether they're taking on new debt. We're going to look at one example from our consumer credit panel, auto debt, which is useful in addressing this particular question. So let's start by looking at credit inquiries. So a credit inquiry is a request made for a consumer's credit report, and that's triggered when a consumer applies for credit. So when they apply for a mortgage or a credit card, that triggers a credit report. So an increase in the number of inquiries would suggest that consumers are increasingly, it's an increase in the demand for credit, whereas if they're declining, that's showing that consumers are the demand for credit is declining. So for the U.S. as a whole, we can see certainly leading up to the recession and during the recession, these credit inquiries declined, unsurprisingly. But over the past few quarters, they've actually begun to increase. So that suggests that there's some increase in the demand for credit for the U.S. as a whole. How does this compare to our region? Well, throughout northern New Jersey, upstate New York, New York City, and Puerto Rico, it's the same pattern where credit inquiries decline but have begun to increase over the past few quarters. It's a similar story from Long Island, although there it's not so much the case that these credit inquiries have increased very much. They probably just ticked up a little bit. So this is a sign that across our region there is a continued interest in seeking out new credit by consumers. So the second thing we'll look at is auto debt. This helps us gauge whether consumers are increasingly willing to borrow. It's a durable good, it's an elective purchase, so it helps us get at the underlying sentiment of consumers. So what I'm showing here are two very different places, auto debt on a per capita basis. This is just total debt, auto debt on a per capita basis for the Buffalo metropolitan area and for Las Vegas. We can see, you know, during the 2000s, much of the 2000s, that this auto debt was increasing. Following for Las Vegas, though, as the recession hit, a very sharp decline in auto debt per capita, which didn't really happen for the Buffalo metro area. And over the last few quarters, there's actually been an increase in Buffalo of auto debt, whereas it's still declining in Las Vegas. So looking at this across metropolitan areas in New York, Northern New Jersey, and in Puerto Rico, this is the percent change in auto debt on a per capita basis from the first quarter to the last quarter of 2010. We can see that compared to the US level, with the exception of Poughkeepsie, all of these places have increases in auto debt that are well above the US average. And certainly there are still parts of the country where this is declining, like Las Vegas and Sacramento. So in conclusion, household debt is relatively low in much of the region, although in some pockets it has risen to relatively high levels. Deleveraging in the region, while certainly severe by historical standards, has been milder generally than average. There are signs of stress for some households that clearly we can see when looking at neighborhoods or across particular parts of the New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico areas. So especially in New York City, in Long Island, and upstate urban cores, we can see that some households are still working through a significant process. And households in the region began to take on some new forms of debt in 2010. So we saw an increase in consumers' willingness and ability to borrow, certainly in terms of auto debt, as the economy is recovering and as credit has started to become more available.